Judah and the Elephant, 1862-1864. Immediately after the Pacific Railroad Act of 1862 had passed the Congress and been signed by the President, Judah had gone to New York to purchase materials and supplies for the Central Pacific. 3 weeks later, on July 21, he had left matters in the hands of an agent and, together with Anna, set sail for California. His intention had been to make certain that the merchants from Sacramento who owned or controlled most of the bonds and stock of the Central Pacific Railroad Company, Crocker, Huntington, Stanford, and Hopkins, the Big Four as they were beginning to be called, could indeed harness the elephant. They couldn't do it without Judah. As he had told them in his report, the principles which produced this result were control and harmony. On June 30, 1862, he had already filed with the Secretary of the Interior a map of the route he had picked, because the bill provided that, upon such filing, the federally owned lands for 15 miles on either side of the projected route would be withdrawn from preemption, meaning that a citizen could not buy or make claim on them. This was a first step in clinching the bargain between the CP and the federal government. Judah had gotten started. There were many people depending on him. Word of the passage of the Pacific Railroad Bill had spread through Sacramento, causing great excitement. On July 12, the Sacramento Union reported that the firemen's parade last evening in honor of the passage of the bill was the most brilliant affair of its kind that has ever taken place in this city. The procession was a mile long, and the route was one blaze of torches and fireworks. There were 100 mottoes carried in the line, all of them appropriate and pithy. One read, "Little Indian boy, step out of the way for the big engine." Another said, "The Pacific Railroad, Uncle Sam's waistband." On his way to California, Judah had written a report on his activities in New York after the bill passed. He said he had found that prices had advanced rapidly with the coming of war. Iron rails, for example, that went for $55 a ton in 1860, now cost $115 a ton and were going up. Common spikes had climbed from 2.5 cents per pound to 6.5. Blasting powder had risen from $2.50 to $15 a keg. Shipping was costing much more. Each ton of rails fetched $17.50 in shipping charges to San Francisco. Insurance premiums had also soared. Huntington had gone to New York to handle purchases upon the best terms he could get before further advances in prices took place. Judah hoped to lay the first 50 miles of track by the fall of 1863, more than a year away. His agent had managed to get a contract for 8 locomotives, deliverable in January 1863, to be paid for entirely in government bonds, when these were issued. Also, a contract for 5,000 tons of rail, and for 8 passenger, 4 baggage, and 60 freight cars. Huntington had paid for all this with pledges from himself and the others, relying on his and the other members of the Big Four's reputations for never walking away from a debt. But although he had fistfuls of stocks and bonds, he had no buyers. Huntington was described by an acquaintance as a man who was something tigerish and irrational in his ravenous pursuit. He was always on the scene, incapable of fatigue, delighting in his strength and the use of it, and full of love of combat. If the Great Wall of China were put in his path, he would attack it with his nails. But he still couldn't get anyone in the East to buy his railroad bonds. In 1862, Huntington worked in New York, Washington, and Boston, spending 3 days in New York, 2 in Boston, and 2 in the Capitol, where he borrowed, hawked, and huckstered. In Boston, he walked into the office of Oliver Ames, older brother of Representative Oakes Ames, and fellow owner of the Ames Shovel Factory, the biggest and best in the country, from whom Huntington, Crocker, and Hopkins had bought thousands of shovels for California's gold miners. Huntington didn't try to sell Ames any bonds. Instead, he offered a fistful of them as security for a loan of $200,000. Promising that he and his partners would guarantee the interest payments on the bonds if the CP failed to meet its semiannual obligations. Ames told Huntington to come back tomorrow. Meanwhile, he checked on the record and found not a single instance of an overdue bill. The next morning, he made the loan and gave Huntington a letter of introduction. On the same promise, Huntington managed to purchase $721,000 worth of rolling stock.